We were cutting corners on most of the defensive possessions. Like you gotta keep the ball in front. If we don't, we gotta help. They kick it out, we gotta contest, and then we gotta rebound, and we were taking a breath at some point before one of those 4 points, and it was hurting us, right? Either we weren't keeping front, or we'd miss the help, or we'd miss the contest, or we'd not block out. So that more than anything was the adjustment. The guys just started playing a lot harder and a lot more connected and finishing the possessions.
Good morning. It's Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. That was Nick Nurse. I'm Blake Murphy. It was 4-4 and JD Bunkus with me. The Toronto Raptors went on a bit of a roller coaster last night. At halftime, it looked like the story would be once again, what the heck is going on with this defense? They gave up 71 points in the first half. You just heard Nick Nurse talk about how the team was cutting corners. I think that's most obvious. You know, you're not finishing possessions. You defend hard for 10, 12 seconds and then lose it from there. That was still the story of a lot of the game, and this was not a particularly strong defensive performance overall. However, 17 points from Precious Achiuwa in the third quarter. You heard me right. Gary Trent with 15 in the fourth. And then Fred VanVleet with the takeover to close it out. The Raptors with a pretty significant comeback to take it at Memphis, 126-113. And to save, both of you guys were in on Ailish, you had the homers parlay, and JD, you were on Raps money line, not only the plus 3.5, but the money line.
Yeah. I wasn't feeling good about it in the first half. I was like, I'm going to lose some money tonight.
I worried for you guys once we saw OG and Kemmer out and Dylan Brooks was in.
And because I bet in the morning during the show.
That's one
without
downside.
Doing any analysis. I just said, yep, I'm boom, money.
You know what, though? So there's pros and cons to that is if we win, we look like geniuses. We bet it first. We get the best line sometimes because it did get bet down before the game. Mm. But if we lose, we just go, well
it's because
we didn't know. We didn't have all the information at the time.
Exactly.
How are we supposed to know?
No problem.
So off of just some of those things you just said, by the way, can I pitch calling Precious Achiuwa chew? Like when he hits a bucket and you just go like, chew.
That's kind of cool.
No? No one's feeling it. I didn't get the
His
reaction.
His name's Precious. He doesn't need a nickname.
I don't know. I like Chew. Or Chewy.
Chewy's better.
Like, you know, I'm feeling it. It's like, this is Toronto, all right? You're going to get a hockey nickname. It's Chewy. Chewy was throwing it down last night. It's funny because
Chewy's way better than Chew.
Those threes that he started knocking down, it was funny the confidence I felt because his feet were so set and the ball was just like perfectly placed. And whenever somebody gets hit with passes like that, I always think, I don't care. You're in the NBA. Make that shot. He was great. But the defense was the story of that game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was it. The first half was embarrassing. And I got to tell you that last night, as good as Precious Achiuwa played, and thank God he played the way that he did because he totally saved them. That energy in the third quarter, I actually thought that he and Yuta Watanabe totally changed the, like, defensive energy of that ball game. The two of them, like, Precious just started trying to jump up and deflect passes. He was all of a sudden filling the lane defensively. I thought Yuta was doing the same thing, trying to tip, trying to give effort, blocking shots. But for the most part, I just thought last night, you know, it really is nice to have a center. And that this whole thing about the 6'9 is everybody on the team thing, that's okay if you have a bunch of dogs who are all going to hustle and box out and really give max effort every single play. But when I'm watching the Raptors right now, and I don't mean to be crapping on them after a win, like a fun win, but boy, oh, freaking boy, the lack of... Run that tape back and watch them rebound in the first half of that basketball game. It is atrocious. Rebounding is effort. Rebounding is awareness to box out and giving a crap. And they just refused to do it. Like, I don't know if I can remember watching a worse rebounding performance than what the Raptors looked like in that first half of that basketball. Like, oh, painful. And all I could think of was, you shouldn't feel this way when Kevin Birch is out. And I never want to watch another Raptors season where there's not one 7-foot guy on the team that grabs boards. Okay. Just never again.
Yeah. And you're almost, you know, you got away like fairly lucky that Steven Adams didn't have much of a game. And that because you were so fast and the offense started clicking, Steven Adams wasn't on the floor. And I actually think I thought Memphis had a weird rotation game. Like Jaren Jackson Jr. was awesome and only played 25 minutes. And
it was a very weird game.
Only like he had quote unquote foul trouble, but he had 4 fouls.
Mm-hmm.
Why foul a guy out yourself by not playing him? And Steven Adams only playing 20 is, you know, defensible in some ways, but that's a huge area to take advantage of the Raptors is with that offensive rebounding. Now, Brandon Clark had a good game, so that took some of that. But yeah, the defensive rebounding was a big problem, and it wasn't all that surprising. And I thought this was a really interesting game because Memphis and Toronto profile pretty similarly. Memphis is the only team in the league that gets out in transition more than the Raptors. And the Raptors are the number one offensive rebounding team in basketball right now, but Memphis is number three. Some of that is Steven Adams, but some of that is also Memphis has a lot of athletes and a lot of guys they trust to pick up whoever in transition coming back the other way. So, hey, go crash the glass, make something happen. And by the end of last night, it was 11-11 in offensive rebounds. And that's, you know, that's kind of advantage Memphis still because, you know, there were just fewer opportunities for them. But, I mean, really, there weren't a lot of opportunities for anyone. There weren't a lot of missed shots in this game. But, yeah, so the defense wasn't where it needed to be. And that defense has been an issue for a good stretch of time. And the Raptors obviously cleaned that up. They only allowed, 41 points in the second half after 71 in the first half. So that's good. That's a good improvement. But I don't know about you guys. I almost come away more frustrated on those nights because the formula is there. We knew the formula coming into the season. We know what it looks like over 7, 8, 9 games at the start of the year, and it can be effective. And then you see the third quarter last night where suddenly Pascal Siakam's back to being all defense Pascal Siakam, and everyone's flying around everywhere. And I know that like once the transition buckets start falling, everyone kind of builds, right? Like you feel that and it grows from there, but it's pretty frustrating to see that first half and then see the second half and be like, yeah, it's reductive. And I was mostly joking on Twitter, but like, just do the second half, the whole game.
That's one thing that throughout the Raptors season so far as a fan, it's been frustrating. And you mentioned it briefly, but the inconsistency in which Raptors team you're going to watch and to see it in like the duality of last night, the huge contrast between the first half and the second half. I don't understand what it could be that shifts so dramatically between one half to another. Like, is it slow starts? Is it just getting confidence? Is it the fact that they also haven't played together in these formats as much because they've been battling injuries and such? So like, that's something you might be able to weigh in more is how can they have so many different identities in one game? And what is the actual identity of this team when you have to see all these different formats in one game?
So I'd like to submit a couple things here. One is that, sure, OG and Kem are out. Mm-hmm. They've had bodies out all season, so we've been kind of doing this song and dance of, well, they haven't had player X and this and that, and we've been making excuses. I think that the defensive issues are now no longer just a weird aberration, and no longer should they just be always couched with their missing players. I think that there are like some pretty significant problems.
They have had one game in their last 10 that was better than a 30th percentile defensive performance
per
cleaning the glass, which again takes out garbage time and things like that. That Sacramento game was their only even remotely average or better defensive performance. And I actually have a breakdown of some of the defensive issues coming up on Sportsnet's YouTube channel a little later today.
Okay, that's awesome. And I really look forward to seeing that. So let me just kind of pick at that then, because here's some of the things that I'm seeing right now. Yes, they're missing bodies, but two, I've already mentioned that they don't have the big guy, and that's a real issue. Like, they really don't have someone who is a massive rim deterrent player, but also just getting rebounds. There's way too many possessions where the Raptors actually get one, and they're not a good enough defensive team right now where you can give a team a second opportunity. And whenever you do, it's like, oh boy, this is going to be rotten. This is going to be really, really bad. And I hate to say this because I really don't want to single one guy out, but man, oh freaking man, it was not lost on me that they looked their absolute worst defensively when Chris Boucher was on the floor, and then he didn't play anymore, and the second half they were better. I can't do the Chris Boucher at the five thing anymore. I'm just sorry. If they're going to play him at the four every once in a while in very sheltered minutes because this team is missing bodies, fine. But I just can't do it. I can't hold back on this anymore. Last year, he was a fun energy player that came in and had a really quality season and made good on the contract. he can't do anything positive on the defensive end. And I know he does the blocks threes and he gets the tips every once in a while. So you think, oh, he's flashy because he's long and he makes these plays. He is horrific. He is horrific in space. He is horrific around the basket. He gets knocked over by the slightest breeze and he can't get a rebound to save his damn life. And I just watched him in that first half and went, please, God, I'm begging you. I, you know how Nick Nurse gets so visibly frustrated? Mm-hmm. I just want to know what it's like being Nick Nurse watching Chris Boucher film defensively. Like, I would love for, there's no way that he isn't just blowing a gasket watching that stuff and praying that he can get away with the 3 minutes that he needs before Yuta Watanabe gets in there. So, Chris Boucher.
So Chris Boucher is the reason that their second half was so dramatically different.
Well, Yuta Watanabe, like, mm-hmm. and maybe this is a good lead in your Yuta Watanabe thing, but it's like, look at the energy that Yuta brought, and just he has the two, like, really impressive blocks. But
like,
it's just
one of the best blocks we'll see this year.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Also, and he got asked about this after and was like, I told you guys, I'll try to block that 100 times out of 100. But successfully blocking the same type of dunk that he got postered into smithereens on last year.
Well, speaking of getting postered into smithereens, like, Chris Boucher, welcome to the club, because John Morant put you on the moon poster.
So, and with Boucher, I mean, I've always had a little bit of a tough time communicating to people what Boucher is, because he's coming, you know, the block numbers are there and the per 36
is G League All-Star.
Yeah. And he was G League Defense Player of the Year, which was like, it was like
905 baby.
But like, it was a bit of a joke. It was like clearly everyone just sorted the blocks per game leaders and picked the top guy from a winning team. Mm-hmm. He's never really been quite that level of defender. I think he's gone backwards on that end this year. And the other thing is, you could stomach some of that, but his true shooting percentage is under 45%. So he's also not giving you the offensive spark that Boucher is supposed to give you. So I think, yes, I've been a little frustrated in the lead up to Yuta Watanabe returning, because I get a lot of responses like I'll tweet like, hey, it's not really a question of who's coming out of the forward rotation when Yuta's back. And I get these responses like, why are you hyping him up? Like, who cares? This team's not a championship team. It's like, okay, these are separate things. When we're discussing the 10th man or the 9th man in the rotation, that's not about the championship. It's just something we discuss over the course of 82 games. There has to be room for both of those things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you saw almost immediately why there has been discussion of, hey, when Yuta gets back, because he's a huge energy guy. He is one of their smartest and most effortful defenders. He didn't finish around the rim particularly well last night. And, you know, maybe that's something you worry about, or maybe that's just his first game back in a long time.
He looked rusty. There was that one play where he's under the basket and he had a ton of time just to lay it in. Yeah. And he kind of just like hot potatoed it. And you could tell right after he was like, oh, whoopsie.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a getting back in the rhythm and flow and feel of a game.
And like, even if it's like, even if those nights happen, what do you want from your eighth or ninth man? He played 14 minutes, he had two blocks, two steals, two offensive rebounds.
So I'm probably reading too much into it, because, you know, I'm an eye test and I'm a feel guy over everything else. And then I like to look at the numbers after, once there is a bigger picture of them. But I, like I said, I really thought Yuta Watanabe changed the complexion of that game. And I thought that his defensive intensity, like, totally changed it. And if we're going to get back to the main theme of today, which is, hey, the Raptors' defensive issues. Good win, but you won because you were more engaged on defense. Like, my third thing on that game is that, hey, Pascal Siakam, you're the man. And we get it that that was an offensive insinuation. And I got to say, all credit to Siakam. I actually think that his ball handling has somehow, like, looks better. And I don't know what to make of that, because he had a shoulder injury.
Yeah, but it's also a shoulder injury where there's a good stretch of time during your rehab where you can't lift that shoulder above your head, but you can play with a basketball and stuff.
Well, I see a sharper handle, and I also see someone who's been a little bit more aggressive getting to the good Siakam spots. So offensively, I've had zero issues with Siakam. Like, really, outside of the four-point game against, I think it was Utah. But whatever, that's the outlier in this point. Now he is looking comfortably like the Raptors' best offensive player by what I would say is a healthy margin. But
I don't know. Dude, Fred might have something to say about that. But
Fred's a great I just mean, I still want the guy who's 6'9" over the guy who's 5'10", you know? And Gary Trent Jr., geez, like, it just continues to be a thing. He hates passing, though. So it's just like, he's allergic to passing.
He did have four assists last night. And it's I don't know how they must possible. Have all been transition assists.
He had four passes. They were all assists.
Yeah. Hey, but he's picking his spots. He's a great passer, I guess.
But now, if I'm really going to be critical of Siakam, it's not his offense, it's his defense. There's just way too many times where I'm watching him and it's like, dude, you're not that good of an offensive player where you just get to kind of relax. You're supposed to be this blend of both. And I don't know if I'm being too critical, you tell me, but I'm seeing him on defense right now and there are just there's play after play after play. And it was happening a lot in that first half where I would go, this breakdown started with Siakam, or Siakam, I think he's supposed to help there, or Siakam really didn't engage anybody on the glass. Siakam just kind of floating on defense there. There was just a lot of what is it you say you do here when he was playing defense, and that's been a pretty consistent theme now that I've been noticing for his entire return, I would say.
Having said that, I don't know if someone said something at halftime or they showed him some clips. I thought he had an unbelievable defensive second half.
But this is what I'm getting at in terms of duality.
Yes.
The Ailish bringing duality to the...
You know why Nick Nurse likes duality, right? Slipknot from Iowa.
I was just going to say, like...
Yeah.
Tell me that duality is nothing but a dream.
That's a joke for two or three people listening. But no, it is an issue, right? And it's some of it's explainable, right? Like Scottie Barnes has a rough defensive stretch and then bounces back. It's like, okay, well, he's a rookie and he probably got coached up and started seeing things and adjusted to that. Or, you know, Precious Achiuwa maybe doesn't feel 1,000% comfortable until he gets that offense going. And then he's more engaged and stuff and he's being fueled in transition. Or it's the Utah... you know, bringing that spark in place of Chris Boucher thing. There are a lot of, this is kind of the point of the YouTube breakdown I have coming out later. And what we've been talking about a lot here is that when you have good defensive personnel and your defense is the worst defense in basketball over a 10 game stretch, there are a lot of ways that just a couple little things will start tilting you back in the right direction because so much has not been there. So yeah, Siakam flips from looking bad again to looking amazing on defense. And, you know, they clean up the defensive glass and get a little bit of a favor from the Grizzlies in terms of Jaren and Steven Adams not playing big minutes.
I do not understand the Jaren coaching.
Thank you, though.
But just both of those guys, I just thought, hey, what is the thing with the first half? Well, your whole team is getting to the rim and you can't keep anybody off the glass whenever the Raptors do get fortuitous with a stop. Yeah. And then the second half, they're like, hey, let's not do that anymore.
Yeah, and like Adams wasn't particularly good, but as the Raptors are like running down your throat, getting all these stops, like swinging it with an offensive, with like maybe the best offensive rebounder in terms of like controlling for like role and minutes and stuff like
and
that.
And sets a great screen.
Yeah, so
weird.
Not that Ja needed that because he was just getting all the offensive rebounds himself, and he's just I don't need Adams to grab him and set me up. I'll just do it. So anyway. Zoom out, really strong defensive second half, but that is frustrating because it continues to highlight that this team can and should be better in a lot of these defensive ways. So,
frustrating but encouraging, no?
Yes, absolutely encouraging.
You'd rather it be half a game than 0%. Well,
you'd rather have the tape of look at this stuff we did well than look at this stuff we did wrong, especially in a stretch like this, and especially like... in terms of, you know, the feel in that locker room, maybe, like, I do think Precious having a huge game, like, he did an interview with Kayla after the game, and I thought that he was, you know, you could tell it meant a lot to him to have a game like that with the season he's had and really contribute. And, you know, you see Utah after the game doing his presser, and he, like, big smiles and so happy to be back and stuff. And, you know, even the way Fred talks about the rest of the guys and where his leadership shines through in those situations. And just, I mean, Fred was a monster down the stretch in terms of offense and, you know, tone setting and organizing that team and stuff. I think you look at those things and then maybe you look and it's like, hey, things have felt like they're really bad. We've had some rough luck with injuries. We're 9-10. And if we can get this last one on this road trip, look at the home stretch ahead. I don't know. I could see that being kind of a turning point game where, like, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel right now. OG and Cam won't be out long. It doesn't sound like you're about to play one more road game and then you have 10 of 11 at home. I could see that being a momentum builder.
I'm buying it being a momentum builder, but I'm also buying it from some practical reasons. Like, you mentioned the Utah thing. I don't know. It kind of feels like that's a small group of people who are talking about the Utah thing who don't really get it, but The Raptors, if you just look at, if they bring Kem, OG, and Yuta back, that means no more Sfi, and that means no more Chris Boucher. And those guys have done not all negative things. Sfi has had his moments, right? Like, I think they won a game this year because of Sfi.
Yeah, at least offensively.
Anyway. Right. But Sfi defensively is very lost, and the identity of the team is still, hey, we play defense and we're tough. And I just thought, watching Yuta play last night, this has been a Raptors team that's really struggled with depth. And part of that reason has been that they've been missing key figures, but also that they've been missing a key depth guy like that. And so to me, it's like, this is the regular season. Depth really matters. Look at what's been happening with the Lakers. And I know they won last night, but this is the thing. You need to have depth to win in the regular season. No, I don't think that necessarily these are championship changing moves, but this has never been a championship season. So why even frame things within that conversation? But if they are going to make the playoffs, if they are going to make a push as a really good team, they're going to need better depth than what they've shown so far. And part of that comes with Yuta. Part of that gets a little bit healthy. And I think part of that, I hope, comes with a game like that where your coach can say, we gave up 71 points in the first half. And then you guys drop that number by almost 30, just with some intensity, some effort, and a little bit of care. And if you can't use that to kind of motivate your group as they're about to head back home in front of their home crowd, where you're supposed to play with a little bit more pride and you're supposed to kind of get back to who you are and as you get healthy, well, then I think that's pretty telling about the group, even bigger picture than just playing defense.
So the other thing that getting those bodies back does, mm-hmm. and this isn't just a depth thing, but Ailish, you talk so often about the importance of what is our identity? Who are we when we go out there, whether it's hockey or basketball or football? And OG and Cam and Yuta are guys that fit the identity of, yeah, you're long, you're fast, you're defensive, you can get out in transition. And I just think there's been a little bit of searching for over the last 10 games of what that identity is. And not what is our identity ideally, but what is it right now? And I think getting some of those guys back will help in that regard.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And I feel like then the team has momentum in terms of this win, as you said, coming home. Everyone's buying in on what their structure is. And I think having a comeback win is even the most powerful thing as a team. You say, hey, you know, we can play at this level. You can reflect on this down the road when maybe they're down early in a game and say, hey, remember when we were on the road and we came back? It's doable. We have what we need. We have the players. We have, you know, the history of being able to come back in a situation. So sometimes a win like that, even though it's messy and it's frustrating as a fan to see the first half be so disappointing, it does as a player give you a little bit of confidence that in a tight situation, you can turn on the jets and win in a big comeback.
All right. Before we move on and talk about your Bills, Ailish, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. That's something to chew on, is that the 71 points the Raptors gave up in the first half came entirely on threes and shots at the rim. Zero Memphis Grizzlies points in the mid-range. On the season, the Raptors have actually done a better job than you might expect with no center, keeping teams away from the rim. They allow the 17th most shots at the rim, which is fine when you don't have a center. They do force the second highest rate of long mid-range shots, which is the least efficient shot on the floor. And it's something, if you're going to give up something to an opponent, you're comfortable with that. However, on those shots at the rim, and we know they give up a ton of threes already, and opponents are shooting 37.5% on those. So there's a little bit of unluckiness there, but there's also a little bit of finish your closeouts, finish your possessions. The issue is at the rim when teams do get there. They're shooting 68% at the rim against the Raptors. That's the second worst mark of any defense in the league, behind only Denver. So who knows? Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it just means one of your centers is the MVP runner-up. But something to chew on is that the Raptors' defense has to have a lot go right to make up for that lack of traditional rim protection and traditional center play. So if you're looking for something that the Raptors can continue to build on, there's a lot from it last night. And this is why the leverage on all those little things defensively is so high, is because when you don't have a rim protector, the best you can do is try to keep teams away from there, because you're just not going to defend it at that high level. So that's something to chew on as you take some real legitimate reasons for optimism out of that Raptor second half last night. We're going to take a break. When we come back, hey, it's Thanksgiving. There are three NFL games throughout the day today, including your Buffalo Bills. We'll talk about that after the break. It's Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
We are giving you the chance to win Leafs tickets all season long. Today's code word is hockey. Text hockey to 590-590 for your shot to win tickets to the Leafs-Avalanche game on December 1st. Big night for my Buffalo Bills. I'm currently wearing a Buffalo Bills sweater, a Buffalo Bills face mask, and I'm trying to channel... Well, I'm not wearing the mask currently while we're on air, but I was wearing it in the building.
Don't lie to your simps.
And on my route here, and I will be wearing it all day when I'm out and about. But yes, it's American Thanksgiving, the joy of a day full of football... Could be ruined.
You and I are at odds today.
What?
Why are we at odds?
Because we say things a lot differently. You say root, I say route. And you say pecan, and I say pecan.
Yeah, so I thought it's pecan pie. We were talking about pies during the break. Guys, you think it's like a HGTV cooking show on the side.
We could be. Honest to God,
but
somebody give us a...
pecan pie.
Pecan.
Pecan.
I don't know. I think it's both.
I don't know. It's kind of whatever you think. And it's... root versus route.
You know what? I'd like a little bit of a squash pie, right? Like, according to that one guy, you're really sleeping on squash pie is what you're really sleeping
Lloyd
on.
Lloyd from Georgetown, by way of Mount Pearl, I'm guessing somewhere around there.
Yeah, our boy Lloyd from Georgetown texted back in about all the things you can do with squash. And
sure.
Yeah, he's a big squash
guy. You know what
guy.
I'd like to do? Squash all this food talk and talk about, the look on your face of like, that was good, but I hate you.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Just let us be happy, you know? We wake up so early, we talk every day for 4 hours, and all Ailish and I want is to share some thoughts on yum, yum, yum.
And
yum, yum, yum.
Okay, but I...
I just needed it. I need it. It makes me happy hearing that drop.
I actually got a bunch of people that messaged me about how much they love the yum, yum, yum.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
They're like, keep playing it every day. Yum, yum, yum. My favorite part of the show. I'm like, I don't understand why, but
it's
we'll take
just
it.
Just because it's good. It's funny.
I just don't have a lot of food takes in general.
Yeah.
So Thanksgiving in the United States, and they are treated to the first game today between teams with a combined record of 3-16-1. Hope you like that Bears Lions game, guys.
Oh my God!
But it'll get somewhere a little better.
I'm really rooting for the Lions to go
of course
winless again.
Oh
no!
Oh, I thought you wanted them to win today and get Nagy out of there.
What a nice 12:30. Though, like, take the day off, 12:30, start your day, have a couple afternoon bevvies.
I have a friend back home. His son is sick right now. Nothing too serious, but he messaged me last night, and he's like, because of this, I have to take the day off tomorrow and stay home with Junior.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no. Like,
he was
very much playing it up of, oh, no, I have to stay home and take care of my sick kid while football's on all day.
So are you working tomorrow, Blake? You're here?
Yeah.
Ailish, you're working tomorrow? You're here?
So did we have the day off?
Yeah, no. Danielle's working tomorrow. I already talked to him about it.
Oh.
I'm working tomorrow.
Yeah.
Old veteran. The old Wiley vet. Vic Palladian.
Yeah, he's taking the day off, right?
Yeah.
Slacker.
So he can get bombed
and
watch football.
And it's on my ox cord Friday. How dare he?
You know what, though? That's kind of the day for him to take off.
Who do you even send those to?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I have to do it myself.
No, I was going
to
say one.
Yeah, you get back there and you be the one that plays the song.
Well, we don't need the fill-in to be playing crappy music. But two is that, you know, Vic doesn't have to hear your terrible songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be good this week, I'm sure.
They were good last time.
I've been putting way more effort into it this week and taking some analysis from people that message in.
Guys, you guys, the whole point of Oxcord Friday was it was just supposed to be like, hey, music you were listening to lately, and it's fun.
Yeah, it's
awesome. Just throw it up.
I like that I've tried to go the theme route, and Ailish thinks it's a competition because Ailish thinks everything's a competition.
Yeah, you are super competitive.
Yeah. So anyway, speaking of non-competitive, the Bears at Lions at 12:30. Yeah. Maybe Matt Nagy's last game. We're going to roll from that into a Raiders.
Sorry, what time did you say it's at?
12:30.
Yeah, sorry. For some reason, my brain heard 9:30, and I was just like, no.
AM?
Well,
I mean, that'd be
kind of nice, actually.
It'd be nice to have some
I actually,
on
that night. Would not be nice because I, here's the thing. I want to go home right after the show, bang, fly out of here, sleep immediately, then just watch football all day.
Yes.
That's the plan.
I haven't napped yet this week, and I need to find a time for one today, and I think it's probably that little bit of space there will be between the 12:30 game and the 4:30 game.
You could nap during the 12:30 game and not miss much.
Yeah, maybe by like the third quarter.
Here's my guess. It's just a prediction. The Andy Dalton, Jared Goff game is not going to spur a lot of conversation tomorrow. It's not going
to unless it's Nagy's last game.
Well, who cares? Even if it is. What? So you guys got big hot takes on who the next Chicago Bears head coach will be? Huh? Who's going to be the next Ditka? Who's going to be the next Bears coach? Ditka.
Mike Babcock.
Yeah, exactly. So who
the
cares?
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Yeah. They suck. They suck over and over and over again.
Reeling.
Then we have Raiders and Cowboys at 4:30.
Yeah, which is at least a little bit more interesting. The Raiders, speaking of coaches that have been axed this year, the Raiders are past the dead coach bounce now. They're reeling. The Cowboys are in an interesting spot where like they're really good defensively, but they don't play a good offensive team in almost until the playoffs. And I worry a little bit about how that preps for the playoffs. And then, of course, we have Ailish, your Bills at the Saints at 8:20 tonight.
And you know
what? How are you feeling?
Last week, I felt great. That was crushed. This week, I'm trying to come in with a more neutral. If I'm going to bet, I actually, last week, I'm going to put myself on blast. Mm. I bet against the Bills.
No, that's okay.
I bet against the Bills, and I won big.
You took the +7?
No, I bet money line against the Bills, and I won some money.
Who told you?
I did that myself.
No, well, I said who told you because you're always the one who's asking for the...
No, I did it myself. And then that way I was more invested. If the Bills win, then I'm happy. If the Bills lose...
Who put you on Colts +7?
I get some money.
Who put you on Happiness Hedges is what
anyway,
I want to know.
And Happiness Hedges is a real thing. But this time around, the game is intriguing for multiple reasons. Obviously, the Bills have fallen from grace and they are fighting tooth and nail to get into the playoffs, but this team that they're matching up against, they're also not in a great spot. They're losing. They're coming in, what, I think three losses in a row, the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big Thanksgiving night game. I don't really know how to predict what's going to happen. I kind of wanted to bounce that off Nate if he gets on the phone with us.
I don't think we're getting Nate today, but we're going to do all of our NFL whip around today for these games and these previews and our betting analysis of them with Cabby later today. He's jumping in here at 8:30. He's coming in studio. So I want to save all this stuff. I will just say this. I love how Blake and I love asking you how you're feeling about the Bills, and it's been the most extreme high of highs or the low of lows. And there's
correct.
It's basically us going, hey, how you feeling? So that we set you up to be like, woo woo, Buffalo Bills. You know, you're doing
or
we're like, how you feeling now? And you do the like, are they frauds? Today you going, I'm going to be more neutral. I don't really know what that looks like, or if you really know.
Just trying to have cautious optimism. How I would explain
it. That's the best way to be as a sports fan.
Cautious optimism is important. And I think, Ailish, you're so optimistic and positive in general. Mm. I was very surprised to hear Monday that you had gone with the emotional hedge. And I'm proud of you. But don't lose too
I'm
much.
I'm not proud of you. I hate that.
Too much Come of on. The positivity and optimism that makes you you. You gotta...
Well, listen to this. 1 month ago, I sat in this room. The Bills had won 5 out of 6. They were leading the league in point differential. They were top of the AFC East. And look how much emotion that I've had to lose and to try to fight through. Now they're on a fringe wild card spot. They could truly be on the outside looking in. And then the Patriots, who like already want to stab, they're the most exciting, invigorating team at this point, which makes Bills fans feel even worse.
And you've got to see them twice coming
and
up.
And I got to see them twice coming up.
That's a lot of stabbing.
It's just like, it can be, if I can maintain a little bit of sanity and cautious optimism throughout the next couple of weeks, that would be a win.
Can I tell you something, though? I'm so jealous of it because I love football for that.
Well, it's nice to have something to be excited about. Just, I feel that.
But actually having stakes and waiting, and you're talking to two guys right now. Blake's never even known what this is like. He had one time there was a fumble against the Patriots. That was it. And that was the one thing that they have. That's their whole franchise. It's the one time, we had a fumble one time, and it could have gone this. That's it. And the history of the Jaguars ends there. I know what it's like to have a football team that's relevant. I know what it's like to have a football team that rides the ups and downs and where you actually care and you go, God, this is our window and we need to have this. And I'm jealous of you because that pain, that up and down nature, that actually caring about waiting for Sunday, God, I miss it. Because right now I'm in Blake land where it's like all of a sudden my team is apathy, where you don't even care.
Well, come on the bandwagon. I'll let you in.
I already have my bandwagon, and that's my Patriots.
The other part is like everyone starts to jump on the Patriots bandwagon against, you know, my wishes.
Here's the thing.
And adds the fuel to my fire.
Vic, this is very much a Vic and I thing. I've always disliked Tom Brady. Always. And so I really want Belichick to win without Brady.
I see that narrative.
I'm a narrative guy in general, and nothing would please. If you could get like, hey, what's your number one power rankings of things you would want in sports? Obviously, the Toronto teams being in championships. Those
great.
Go 1, 2, 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would, I don't know. I was going to say, would I rather have a Seahawks Super Bowl or a Belichick versus Brady Super Bowl? But I'll tell you this, it's actually close.
But you were willing to trade in your Seahawks Super Bowl the other day for like less
mediocre
seasons.
It's a worthless Super Bowl. Honestly, it's like the least meaningful Super Bowl in the last 25 years.
I really need to push back on you lumping yourself in with me when the Seahawks have won a Super Bowl and made the playoffs 9 times in the last 13 years.
No,
and the Jaguars have made the playoffs once.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm you this season.
Oh, just this season.
Just this season. But no, not overall. I'm not you. Ugh.
No, there's an element.
No, that's what disgusts me. Is
the
that
look
I,
on your face was just...
There's a totally different feel of like, oh, this is new and I hate being here because I know how good it is compared to, oh, I'm here and I know this all too well and this is all there ever is.
No, you don't even know. You don't know what we know.
Okay, back to my Bills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
At least
the Jaguars have their own pick, though.
Is it the man in the iron mask? Or there's like some version of that where it's like the royalty wants to see what it's like living with the peasants. And there's a story where they do the switch with a doppelganger.
Yeah, like that trading places situation.
That's me. I'm actually royalty who lives great every single season with the Seahawks. I'm having my like one day down with you, the swine.
The swine.
The Jaguars fans. And I'm like, it's dirty in here. I want to go home.
No.
I want to go home. All right, back to the Bills.
Okay, so let me be the stats person now and take a little bit of the reins and ask you what you think of these. So Bills entered week 11, allowing fewest points per game.
Uh-huh.
And then the Saints entered last week as well, ranked the number one run defense. And they both got absolutely smoked. So my question is, which defense will bounce back tonight? Because that's going to be, I think, the major determining factor on who's going to win. It's who do you have more faith in?
Defensively tonight.
Defensively.
Saints.
With the fact that the Bills had entered with the fewest points a game and then they got smoked. And the Saints entered with the number one run defense and also got smoked.
This is great. JD and I are going to disagree. I have more faith in the Bills defense in this one because I just don't think the Saints have the horses to run all over Buffalo the way the worst Buffalo games have looked.
The worst Buffalo games have basically been like one star player also smashing the Bills.
Right. And there's no Alvin Kamara and it's a backup quarterback situation again this week, right?
Yeah. It's Semien.
Yeah.
So you're right, Blake. This is the answer is who's going to give up less points. It's going to be the Bills because I don't think that, here's the thing. Sean Payton's a great coach. I don't think he's a great enough coach to make, Trevor Siemian and maybe Mark Ingram, because it might not even be him. He's questionable coming into this game. All of a sudden carry an offense. Marquez Callaway and I think it's Traquan Smith. Like they're just the Saints are not the Saints. Adam Troutman. They're just not. They're just not anything comparable to what they once were. All of a sudden, all the Saints fans that were crying about Drew Brees and not being able to throw downfield are like, can Drew Brees come off the panel just for like a minute? And they're given, there's the weird thing happening with the Taysom Hill contract that they just keep giving him tons of money despite him not playing this year. I for a second thought, Taysom Hill must be ripping it up right now, and I'm just not paying close enough attention to Saints games. He must be coming in here and doing great things. They gave him $40 million, and no, he's not doing anything anymore.
I love contracts like that, too, yeah. where it's like, oh, yeah, here's the contract, and it could escalate to this much, but we are in 1,000% control of if it can escalate to that much.
So the Bills, I think, defense plays well tonight because the Bills' defense has played well against non-factors offensively. That's been the story of the season. Well, I'll probably reference, I want you to reference those numbers again when we have Cabby in here. Mm-hmm. I'll probably reference this again, but there has been no team in NFL history with a greater deviation in, like, the way they play than the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, like the Toronto Raptors last night.
their play against the lesser lights of the NFL is tops in DVOA. You remember from the beginning of the season? Mm-hmm. Now, when they've been playing good competition, it's been one of the worst. There's been no team ever that has fluctuated the way that the Buffalo Bills have, which is insane. They still get credit for that Chiefs win, but I think what we know about the Bills is that they can stomp out bad teams, and I expect them to stomp out a Saints team that's kind of reeling right now. And I know this is a backs against the wall game for the Saints, and maybe the Bills are overlooking them to see New England the following week. And
I certainly hope not.
But I just think on a short week with how banged up the Saints are that after the way that the Bills got manhandled by Jonathan Taylor, that it's going to be a bit of a statement game for them. I just actually though anticipate that the game is going to be low scoring for both teams potentially. And if it is that, then that's why my answer was the Saints,
because it's like tonight.
The Saints actually have to play a football team out there. Like Josh Allen was the MVP favorite a couple weeks ago. there's still
an
offense.
Things change.
What I'm most curious about, like narratively, and what I was going to bring up with Nate is, how much of this actually gets put on Josh Allen's shoulders if they continue to struggle versus the running back thing? Because he does have more weapons than I think people are giving him credit for. We had a guest on the other day, I can't remember who it was, that was saying, oh, they should have gone out and gotten Zach Ertz. And I'm like, I don't know. They've been getting good tight end play this year. Stephon Diggs was the story of the season last year, and now people are kind of like, where's Diggs and what's actually been happening with Diggs? They signed Sanders, who a season ago looked great. And so maybe he hasn't been that this year. Mm-hmm. Maybe he did get old overnight, but he wasn't old last year, and he's a route runner, and that's supposed to age well. Cole Beasley still making plays on third down, still one of the better slot receivers. Like, everybody might hate that guy, but he's good at his job. And I can't suss out how much of it is like the design, because they don't run the ball like at all. They hate running the football there, which is odd in a Brian Daboll offense. But I wonder how much of that is personnel. And if it is that much personnel, then why didn't you address it more in the offseason? Like, shouldn't you have potentially at least had a different way to win than the way you have now, which is every week Josh Allen has to be Superman, where he's the best running back and the best quarterback for your team?
So just to backtrack on something, you said that you feel confident that the Bills can stomp out bad teams. I don't feel that way. I think that they lower their level of play to these teams. Like, as we've seen, losing or having tight games, well, they lost to the Jaguars, as we all remember, and it was that Miami Dolphins game that they barely squeaked by, I think, and it was like by a field goal maybe that they won, and it was a horrible performance, and things all started to go downhill from there, and I think it might be the confidence being shaken a little bit, and that obviously shows with the quarterback, who's the leader of the team. I don't think that he's been making at all the same type of plays or playing with the same confidence that he has been, regardless if he has the weapons or not. I think when you look at how they've crumbled under the pressure and lost in games that they should have won, that makes me nervous that it's the fragility a little bit in terms of how confident they're feeling.
Yeah, and even that Dolphins game, they ended up winning that by a decent score, but that was like a Josh Allen touchdown with a minute left to spread that out a little bit. So I don't know.
So that's why tonight, tonight's game, I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic. They should definitely win this game. They should have won the last game, and they should have won many other games before that. So at some point, that narrative will hopefully change, and we'll feel more confident that they can beat bad teams. But I don't, at this moment, feel that great. And another point I wanted to bring up, the Bills have played the league's easiest schedule by DVOA. The league's easiest schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible thing to know as a fan, that they've played literally the easiest schedule and this is where we are. It's only going to get harder. They play the Patriots twice in the next couple weeks. And if you can't be on the top of the AFC in general, playing the easiest schedule, I don't have much confidence that you have confidence in yourselves. And I think that is even a bigger testament to the Patriots, sadly, who have battled it out and risen in the standings regardless of that fact.
So they do have those two games against the Patriots, who rank third in DVOA per Football Outsiders right now. And sandwiched in between those games, a game with the Buccaneers, who are first in DVOA. So we're going to find out a lot about the Bills over the next couple of weeks.
This is sort of the year where that means the least to
me.
Because everybody
sucks. Everyone's beating everyone. You know?
It's trying to control for quality of opponent, but we don't know the quality of opponent. And
it's like, well, you know, the
actual model gets into a lot of like, well, the Bills allowed this much rushing to Jonathan Taylor, who rushed this much against this team, but that team might have sucked that week and everything's all over the place. So it's helpful. But and I do think, like, if we're grouping the league into tiers, to say, like, hey, Buffalo's had an easy schedule and they have three really difficult games coming up, helpful for that. But yes, to determine, hey, the Bills are still the number one defense in football, no.
Like, this season has been wild in the sense, name a team that hasn't lost to a team that they should have beat. Like, it's been sometimes a coin flip between teams that should completely dominate another team and, like, what are we seeing here? Like, even last weekend, it was like all these teams that were in playoff positions had horrible weekends. So I do think you have to take it with a grain of salt, the stat I said with the easiest schedule, but we don't really have much else other than the fact that that's the stat. And as a fan, you feel like, hey, we should have won about four of those games that we lost.
You know what's hilarious about where we're at so far in the season is the team I feel weirdly the most confident in the AFC is the Chiefs. I know the offense.
At the beginning of the season, completely different,
full circle.
Right?
But it's just, we did all this talk. Yap, yap, yap. Chiefs, Chiefs, Chiefs.
I came in here and was high and mighty about the Bills beating the Chiefs. And I said, oh, yeah, they showed them. That's the statement when they broke the Chiefs. I think that was karma.
But also, I like that we've been able to do the, JD, you and I were heavy, like, once the show debuted, kind of like, hey, it's a fade the Chiefs time right now. Like, the market hasn't caught up to the Chiefs not being quite as good as we thought. And we've now hit the point where, like, it's going the other way. And it's like, maybe has it not come full circle enough? And I haven't seen the line for this weekend yet.
I would like to just say that I still think the Chiefs suck.
Yeah.
That the Chiefs still suck. I'm just saying that it's one of those, you're only trash it compared to the crusty, because the rest of the AFC is also trash. Like, the Titans are at the top. The Colts are okay, but it's still a Carson Wentz team. If they fall behind, I don't trust Wentz to just go beat that Chiefs offense in Arrowhead or something. Like, let's be serious here.
Really disappointing that the Chargers, who I was very high on early on.
Chargers suck too.
Yeah.
Chargers suck. Patriots are fine, but let's see Mac Jones play in a big game. Let's see Mac Jones play in a really meaningful moment and actually have to come through. I'm still a little suspect of them. I'm just saying the AFC is terrible. I think that Arizona and Green Bay are good teams. I think that Dallas is halfway decent. Dallas was really beat up on the offensive line last week. They were missing their two stud receivers, and they still hung around in that ball game on the road against Kansas City with their defense playing that way against that offensive line. So, like, I think that the NFC has the better teams this year by a pretty significant margin when I'm talking about, like, who I trust. But, yeah, just the overall point about DVOA and trying to figure out who's a good team, who's a bad team, what the schedule is, what the blah, blah, blah. We know. You know, it's basically a week-to-week thing now where you're going in and saying, hey, this team is good right now in this exact moment, or this team is struggling right now in this exact moment. You should be able to get this win. And that's how I feel about the Bills tonight is, hey, New Orleans sucks right now. They're struggling. Simeon is bad. Hey, Josh Allen, you're an MVP. How about you just beat the brakes off of the Trevor Siemian team tonight? Hey, Daboll, how about you come up with a better game plan or something comparable to Sean Payton a year removed from everyone saying that you are, you know, one of the premier offensive minds, and we cannot believe that the rest of the league passed on making you a head coach somewhere. So, yes, this is very much, I think, a big statement game for the Bills. They cannot sleepwalk through this one, because all of a sudden you could wake up 2 weeks from now and you can't even catch the Patriots, and that's a nightmare.
Exactly.
Let's take a break.
I was just about to say that if the, I'm trying to pull it up. The if you're listening, we have a very special thing.
You are.
So tune it up right now. Crank the volume. We're giving away Leafs tickets, so not a big deal. Leafs fans, we're giving away tickets to the Maple Leafs December 1st game against the Colorado Avalanche, who are fire. You get to see your boy Kadri back. which would be pretty cool.
I think I'll probably go to that game.
Yeah, I think I'll try. All you have to do is download our podcast, The Fan Morning Show, today and tomorrow, and listen for the different code words that are placed throughout each episode. Finally, text each code word to 590-590, and you'll be entered for a chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry. The winner will be selected on Monday, November 29th. So just to reiterate, you got to listen to the podcast for the code words. You'll hear my voice giving you away the code word. You text the code word to 590-590, and you'll be entered for a chance to win. Leafs tickets on December 1st against the Colorado Avalanche. So best of luck. Get listening to the podcast, and it's fun to give away free stuff.
Listen to the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Not that hard.
And you follow it on Spotify. Mm-hmm. If you are on iTunes, it would be really, really nice of you to leave a kind review.
Yes.
A little five-star banger.
That won't help your odds in the ticket giveaway, but it will help karma. And karma
helps you in the
ticket
giveaway.
Karma helps you. So, I mean,
like, five stars. Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum.